fact today of a rising late Honorable Groenewald. So, Honorable Members, good morning. We are ready to start our meeting. Good morning, Honorable Whitfield. Honorable Whitfield, good morning. Was good seeing you yesterday. Morning, Honorable Molekwa. I'm not going to give the colonels by name. Honorable Peacock, was good seeing you. Honorable Shembeni, what happened to Honorable Moss? I saw in the house yesterday for this good singer in the house. Our whoop, good morning. Honorable Sir Blanche, very good singing in the house. You and Whitfield.
Good morning, Chairperson.
Good morning. Very good seeing you in the house. Good debate. Thank you, Honorable Sir Blanche. Honorable members, we are ready to start. As I said, the meeting is now session.
Chairperson.
Yes, I'm the...
Was it not good to see me yesterday in the house?
Honorable Meshu, how could I not say you? I apologize. I'm looking younger and younger in Parliament House and recognize you.
Thank you. Apology accepted, Chairperson. Thank you so much. That's
so
good to see you also.
Honorable Meshu, I really was very happy to see you. Honorable Shetty Mum will also be catching a flight shortly. So we may lose all our quorum. Honorable Meshu, thank you very much for your good advice. Always appreciated and listen very carefully to all the members in our committee. And I do listen, you would see that when you make certain comments, I do respond. Honorable members, the Honorable Minister has been called to an urgent cabinet meeting. So the Honorable Minister has apologized for today's meeting. As the Minister has apologized for today's meeting. We have sent a number of Major General Rabi. There's a team who, a senior team, the Deputy Minister will indicate who will be here. Welcome, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Whip, and all the staff from SAPS and the Civilian Secretariat. We welcome the Acting Director of the Civilian Secretariat. We are ready to start. Honorable Deputy Minister, could you just for record purposes indicate who will be representing the Office of the National Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to members. I will allow General Mutala to indicate who is with him in the platform through you, Chair.
Thank you very much. So General Mutala is representing the National Commissioner today. GM? On the
hello.
Yes,
unless there is another senior officer beside him, but I was informed that he will be here.
General Mutala, you may indicate who is representing the NASCOM. Honorable Sir Blanche, I have noted your hand. General Mutala.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, and Honorable DM. From the SAPS side, I'm with General Rabi, the Head of Strategic, and also General Matonzi, the component head for social crime prevention, and then General Pinar from component proactive policing. I've seen also Brigadier Fanyampal from Legal Division Legal Services, and also General Peters from corporate communication, and then we also have Colonel State, who is our parliamentary liaison officer.
welcome Acting Secretary Mr. Amaro. Thank you very much for those introductions. For record purposes, it will be captured. Honorable Sir Blanche.
Chairperson, thank you. Now, I just want to inform you that, you know, where I am at the moment, you know, here, you know, the power crisis is just going to be for the whole period of our meeting. And but I am online. I don't foresee a problem, but I just want to, you know, inform you in advance if there's something. You will know that I haven't just, you know, deserved it. Challenge them with the power. Thank you.
Honorable members, we all have some kind of load shedding at some time or the other. So we know that we'll fill in for one another. The Honorable Whip will also assist me when I have load shedding. I do try to go on to and log onto my phone, so we do then try and assist one another. Could you please assist one another again and be patient? We are today just a single person who is pleased with the current situation, and it certainly makes our work very difficult. As I said, I do try my mobile hotspot, but sometimes even that fails me. Honorable Meshu and then Honorable Shengeni.
Chairperson, I'm currently using my phone because I have load shedding and I'm not sure how long the battery will last, so I'll extend my apology if I'm cut off because of load shedding. Thank you.
Accepted, as I said, we understand the situation. It's not an ideal situation for us to do online meetings. Honorable Shivdeni.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Good morning, to the GM and the other folks. I've got a very same problem, not shaking where I am. So if anything happens, I've already reported to you about it.
Thank you, Honorable Shindeli. Honorable Whoop, your hand is up.
Thanks, Chair. Just throwing in an idea as to, because it seems we're going to live with this load shedding for quite some time, can we consider, not saying we must take a decision now, but can we consider physical settings of our committees if possible? Just throwing it as an idea.
Honorable Chair, it is exactly my sentiment. So could we request the staff, our content advisor, to do an analysis of the responsibility of the committee physically? The Section 194 committee does meet physically. There are committee rooms that should be available, and I do not think that there should be any problem for this committee to meet physically. I'm not going to do any response to this, but certainly, colleagues, could we look at the modalities of meeting physically? If we just take a head count of today, more than half of the members will be with load shedding. We'll be having a meeting for an hour and we'll soon have no quorum. And it's very impossible for members to follow the meeting. If half of the meeting disappears, one, I have no quorum, and two, if members are unable to follow the meeting, they're unable to participate, and they do not get the full gist of the content of the meeting. Honorable Whip, we'll certainly investigate that possibility and come back to you in the next meeting. There's nothing else, if the 194 committee can meet physically, and it's a hybrid meeting. I do not see the, there shouldn't be a challenge. How do we meet in this way when we have so many challenges? So let us investigate and come back to the committee. Agreed?
Agreed, Chair.
Thank you. honourable members, agreed. Honourable members, could we now have the agenda presented to us? We have dealt with the apologies. Could we have the agenda, please? Could we reflect the agenda? We are going to take the further responses by the department on the public submission. I've asked that the civilian secretariat brings us the legislative schedule for the remainder of the sixth parliament, and then we have to reconsider the addendum of the tax ACP. Honourable members, do we have a proposal for the adoption of the agenda?
I move, Chair.
The Honourable Whip moves for the adoption of the agenda. Do I have a seconder?
Seconded, sir, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Meshu. Do we have the adoption, the acceptance of the apology? The proposed acceptance of the apology. Oh, Honourable Marekwa also apologized. Do we have any further apologies, Babawa? Good morning, sir. I don't have any further apologies. Thank you very much. The apologies are accepted. The honourable members, it has come to my attention that two members of the public have indicated that they wanted to do additional submissions. We then had to look at and reassess the time frame for submission. We had a conversation with our legal advisor regarding the publication of the bill an extended period or an additional period. We are definitely going to have a struggle to motivate for the publication. If we do another round of advertisements, it must be done in all languages, and we have to motivate very strongly, as nothing was done wrong in the first publication, and since we extended the time frame, we have not received any official requests for late submission. The Red Cross was the only institution that requested a formal addition that they want to give, and I think they will present it. My indication today, I'd like to express the fact that if the members would like, and if you so require, we workshop the bill in next week's meeting to take members through the entire clause by clause of the actual bill, and not only snippets of clauses as we have done now. This will allow us then to say that we have done the bill extensively in detail, clause by clause. We can then return in the next term to finalize the bill. We must also bear in mind that the bill still needs to go through the NCOP. The November deadline is looming, and if we do not, then we have to accept that the bill will definitely not be passed this year. I would like the bill to be passed, but I'm not going to rush through. I would like us to have consensus, and when we do go to Parliament, it would be best if all political parties support the bill. Could Honourable Majosi please be allowed into the meeting? Honourable Majosi is still in the waiting room. Honourable members, that's my opening remarks. If you would like to comment on what I have said, you could do so now. Honourable members, if you have any comments, Honourable Siabi, your hand is up.
Yes, thank you, Chair. The
think I want to identify what you just said, Chair. But at the same time, I want to suggest that if possible, we can look at, if it's approved, we can look at having an extension for public submission. Maybe by 2 weeks, we can re-advertise it for another 2 weeks so that we are sure that we are not getting, we are not closing anyone outside. That would be my submission, Chair, if it's possible.
Thank you very much, Honorable Wood. Noted, and we'll look at that. Honorable Sablanche.
Chairperson, thank you. I share the sentiment. You know, you touched on that, and also the work. I really support, you know, the sentiment that we need, we mustn't rush this through. It's an important piece of legislation, and I think everybody from our side, I hope, you know, have the same view. We need to do a proper work here to ensure that we have every possibility covered. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Sablanche and Honorable Wolf, it is the practice of the Chair to exhaust all avenues before we present the bill or the amendment for final approval. I prefer a consensus approach, and I prefer the bill to be adopted unanimously in the committee, that we agree on the clauses to be amended and the necessary amendments which should be made. That has been the practice in the committee, and I certainly want us to maintain that practice. I'm sure all the political parties will agree with me on that. Am I correct? We may go into the House, and obviously when we do present it, I'm not silent or trying to determine what you say in the House. We do have our differences, and that is correct. As different political parties, we do have these. But at the end of the day, the working style of this committee has been to reach some form of consensus, and I would like us to continue with that. There's been an agreement. Nicolette, you will look at those recommendations of the committee, and we will certainly take it into account. I'll now allow Honorable GM to do the opening remarks for the further responses of the Civilian Secretariat before the Acting Secretary, Mr. Amaro, does the presentation, or the GM will introduce who will do the presentation, whoever will do the presentation. Thank you very much, GM.
So thanks, Chair, and thanks to members. Without further ado, let me ask the Acting Secretary to lead in the responses for the interest of time. Thank you, Chair. Over to Secretary, through you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Amaro.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable GM, and Honorable Members. We have prepared the presentation, which will be led by Advocate Yolanda Krishna. Through you, Chairperson, I will ask her to present.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable DM and Honourable Members. Chairperson and Honourable Members, the committee will remember that on the 14th of September last week, the department provided the committee with responses to the public submissions on the Popasara Bill. The International Committee of the Red Cross, then after the meeting on both the 14th and the 15th of September respectively, submitted additional motivation for the retention of all the amendments of Section 1.4 of the Principal Act, as well as a humanitarian exemption clause. Next slide, please. The purpose today is for the department to provide additional responses to the the additional submissions by the ICRC. Chair, I just thought today I'll recap on what section 1.4 in the Principal Act actually says. And Chairperson, will you allow me to just read the relevant section, or will the members take note of it on slide 4? I will then read what does section 1.4 in the Principal Act currently state. It states, notwithstanding any provision of this Act or any other law, any act committed during a struggle waged by peoples, including any action during an armed struggle, in the exercise or furtherance of their legitimate right to national liberation, self-determination and independence against colonialism or occupation or aggression or domination by alien or foreign forces, in accordance with the principles of international law, especially international humanitarian law, including the purposes and principles of the Charter of the United Nations and the Declaration on Principles of International Law concerning friendly relations and cooperation amongst states, in accordance with the said charter, shall not for any reason, including for purposes of prosecution or extradition, considered as a terrorist activity as defined in subsection 1. Next slide, please. Now, the Popatara Bill seeks to defeat subsection 1.4, and the reasons that we have previously given for this, I'll also recap on those. First of all, the Geneva Convention on 12 August 1949 and Additional Protocol 1 relating to the protection of victims of international armed conflict, and Additional Protocol 2 relating to the protection of victims of non-international armed conflict, were adopted at Geneva. It was signed by the Republic, ratified by the Republic in 1995, and incorporated in our South African law by means of the implementation of the Geneva Conventions Act in 2012. Next slide, please. Now, these two additional protocols apply, amongst others, to armed conflicts in which peoples are fighting against colonial domination and alien occupation, and against racist regimes in the exercise of their right of self-determination. The two mentioned protocols lay down the obligations of both the state parties and other combatants, which may include guerrilla groups which want to benefit from the protection of the protocol. The Popatara was adopted in 2004, and the implementation of the Geneva Conventions Act in 2012. And therefore, there's, in other words, a need for the Popatara to be aligned with the GCA. Next slide, please. The second main reason for this deletion is the Financial Action Task Force Mutual Evaluation Report that came out in October 2021. This report recognizes that the Popatara contains several offences related to terror financing. In generally, the criminalisation of terror financing in South Africa is broadly consistent with most of the provisions of the CF Convention. Next slide, please. However, the Popatara excludes from the definition of terrorist activity certain acts committed during an armed struggle. This exemption narrows down the scope of the terrorist financing offence in comparison with the CF Convention. Article 6 of the Terror Financing Convention compels each state party to adopt necessary measures, including domestic legislation, to ensure that criminal acts within the scope of the convention are under no circumstances justifiable by considerations of a political, philosophical, ideological, racial, ethnic, religious, or other similar nature. Protocol 1 also prohibits acts or threats of violence, of which the primary purpose is to now additionally on the 14th and the 15th. The ICRC refers to Clause 1-4 in the Principal Act as the International Humanitarian Law Savings Clause and is of the opinion that in terms of international law, such clause must reflect in South African domestic legislation. An IHL savings clause excludes from the scope of counterterrorism legislation those activities conducted in an armed conflict by the parties to the conflict and persons acting on their behalf which are regulated and not prohibited by IHL.
Recording in progress.
In section 4, in comparison to the requirement of Article 2 of the TF Convention. The fact they've considered this as a very major factor in their assessment of the recommendation on the criminalization of the terrorist financing. It also played a role in the assessment of the country's ability to provide international cooperation in extradition matters relating to the terrorist financing offences. Also, in terms of the general principles of our common law, which require the state to prove unlawfulness, it implies that the action of humanitarian organizations would not fall foul of the offense of terrorism or the terrorist financing offense. Therefore, we say in conclusion that we still maintain that the deletion
indicated that they are unable to attend today's meeting due to prior commitments. Could we then send them the responses in writing, formally in writing? It should come from the chairperson's office. Honourable members, we have the responses. Honourable Majorzi has also indicated that she has load shedding and that she has difficulties logging in. Again, the proposal by the WIP is extremely important, and we will have to look at the possibility of meeting physically. It is very difficult for honourable members to follow this important role if they are unable to log in. Honourable members, we now have the responses. I am taking hands. If you could indicate if you'd like to speak now. Honourable members, I've noted Honourable Meshu. And then Honourable Sablanche. That order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Unfortunately, because I've been using my phone, whenever calls would come in and messages, I would lose what the presenter was saying. So I'm going to ask maybe some questions of clarity, because I definitely have missed some of the things she said. What I want to understand is the humanitarian not accepted because of fear that terrorist organizations might hide behind the cloak of being a humanitarian organization. I need clarity on that, what that means, because over the years, I'm not sure, I should be corrected if I'm not correct, that over the years, when the humanitarian clauses were in the bills and such organizations were allowed to go into areas of conflict, what are their experiences that we can be given as examples that there were terrorist organizations that abused the privilege of humanitarian organizations being allowed into conflict areas, and other countries that have such humanitarian clauses, how do they ensure that the terrorist organizations do not pretend to be some of them, some do not pretend to be terrorist organization and go into areas of conflict and cause confusion or cause havoc and so on. So I want to know from those who still have such process, how do they ensure that that terrorist organizations do not abuse the privilege that's given to humanitarian forces to in order to stabilize? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Meshu, Honorable Sablanche.
Yes, President, thank you. Let me start by really appreciating the presentation done by the presenter from the Secretariat. I think that was very, very well explained. It is a pity, though, Chairperson, that we don't have, you know, the other parties to respond. I mean, you know, the people that made that submission to respond. And I think for me now, it would only be fair to get their response to make a, you know, adjustment for them, you know, to have both input, and that will allow, you know, for me as a person, you know, to consider both and come to some sort of a, you know, a view. So my recommendation would be, Chairperson, that we wait for the responses, that we can take that also into consideration. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Could you remove the slide, please? Honourable Members, we'll send the responses to the ICRC in writing. We'll also request them to clarify their position in writing. We look at the program and we see it can be listed in the meeting. Thank you very much. I do not see any further hands. you have your hand up again, or is that
Yes, Chairperson.
It comes in now.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to ensure that I also be sent that the response in writing, please.
All members will receive the response in writing. The Crofts will receive their presentation in writing, and we will receive their responses in writing. Agreed? Agreed. Thank you very much, honourable members. The next item on the agenda is the update on the legislative schedule. We have the civilian secretariat to do that. Honourable Deputy Minister, you may introduce the next item.
So thank you very much, Chair. Thanks, members, once more. I request the Acting Secretary, Mr. Amaro, to lead in that regard to your chair.
Thank you, Honourable Deputy Minister. Mr. Amaro.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable DMN members. The next presentation is about the progress in terms of the legislation drafting progress. So the approach that we have taken here is we first indicate where we are currently and then where we stand for going forward. So Advocate John Bell will lead in terms of the presentation through you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, my sincere apology.
Yes, Honourable Mention.
My questions were not answered. May they answer them before we go ahead, please?
Honourable Mention, do you want the responses now or would you like it later? It appears that you would like the responses now.
Yeah, that would help. That would really help.
Honourable, before we do the legislative program, do you have the responses for Honourable Mention, please?
Honourable Chairperson, I will ask Advocate Christina to respond and also request Mr. Naidu from National Treasury to also assist if he can fit through you.
You may?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair and members. Yes, on the issue about the exemption clause, the Sera financing, as I indicated, the Sera financing provisions of the bill, in the bill, are derived from the Financing of Terrorism Convention for the Suppression of Financing of Terrorism. And the crime only applies to financing terrorist entities and activities. The ICRC specifically renders humanitarian assistance to victims of armed conflict. And these cannot remotely fall within the ambit of terror financing. If we insert a humanitarian exemption clause, such an open-ended reference to humanitarian organizations would really open the door to terrorist entities impersonating such organizations. The immunities recognized for the ICRC in terms of international law exempt it from having to testify in criminal proceedings of tribunals and domestic courts. And the treatment of victims would constitute proof that they were in fact victims of war crimes sought to be prosecuted. So immunity does exist for organizations such as the ICRC. And therefore, we still maintain that there's no necessity for an exemption of the ICRC specifically. If I can also ask if other colleagues on the platform from National Treasury, and I don't know if someone from FIC has been joined, if they need to add anything, if they can please add something to the response. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Do we have National Treasury present today?
Good morning, Honourable Chair. I'm Janine Bednuk-Yose from the Legislation Unit in the National Treasury. We've been engaging with Advocate Kritzinger and colleagues on the amendments to this bill and also on the General Laws Amendment Bill that we are concurrently processing. Along with FIC colleagues have been, you know, carefully considered the submissions that were made in the meeting and you know the pros and cons of options, and there was, in the end, along with consultation with the state law advisors, there was, in the end, a strong, united conclusion in line with what has been presented by Advocate Kreuzinger. So we would express our support for that approach that's been presented in the presentation this morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the response. Do we have any further responses? Honorable Mayhew?
Chairperson, my other question was whether they are basing the reason for refusing to include the exemption on fears that there can be a terrorist organization that would be successful. And how linked to that question is how are countries that have these exemption clauses in their laws, they have them, even in Africa, how are these countries ensuring that terrorist organizations do not impersonate as humanitarian organizations because of that laws in their laws? Thank you. And if they can give examples of countries what they know of how such clauses were abused by terrorist organizations that are impersonating.
Thank you very much. So, Valerie, the criteria?
Chairperson, can we request that we respond in writing so that we can have details for the response for Honorable Mishu, if you allow us?
Honorable Mishu, could we allow them to respond to you in writing? Could they also give us a more detailed, and if you, I think we agree that the responses that we do receive should also be in writing, even though they have given us a verbal response now. I would like us to have those responses in writing so that we can study those responses and so that we have a record when we do follow the processes that we have embarked on. I would like all the responses to be done in writing as well. It does assist us when you look at your notes and you have a record of the questions and the responses. Honorable members, do you have any further comments?
Agreed, Chairperson. Thank you.
Agreed that everything be put in writing to us? Agreed. Honorable members, we could then move to the next item which was already introduced. Let us continue for the legislative process. You may start.
Morning, honorable members. I'm going to brief you on the legislation drafting program for after the end of the sixth administration. Next slide, please. So the purpose for the presentation, Chair, is to provide the portfolio committee with a briefing on the legislative schedule for the remainder of the sixth administration. I'm on slide 3. I'm going to start here with the SAPS Amendment Bill first. The SAPS Amendment Bill that was published for public comment on the 20th of October 2020 was for a period of 4 weeks, and it, among other proposals, to instill professionalism, incorporated the recommendations of the report from the panel of experts, as well as provide that the function related to community policing forum structures be transferred from SAPS to the provincial CSPS and the NEC. The published bill was consulted in an awareness campaign in all 9 provinces. So on slide 3. The published bill will also provide for guidance in respect of members of the PPS structures. By following the public participation process of the bill, there were consultations that were convened by National Treasury and SAP, and it became clear that in the present financial situation in the country, it would not be possible to provide stipends for members of the PPS structure. Slide 14. Chair, as a result, the proposal in the bill that stipends will be paid has to be revisited. The issue of funding of PPS structures has been a stumbling block since July 2021, and this prevented the SAP bill from being further processed through the JCPS cluster for cabinet approval for introduction. However, the current position is that the CPS structures should be transferred from the SAP to the CSCS and the NEC. And the CSCS and the SAP are jointly working together to arrive at an appropriate funding model for the CPS structures. Slide 5, please. Chair, the process by vote on the SAP amendment bill is that it's anticipated that by October 2022, the drafting team will report back to the Development Committee and the National Treasury regarding the outcome of the CPF funding issue. By November 2022, the bill will once again need to be provisionally certified by the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, and the amended SAYAS report must be signed off again by the SAYAS unit in the Presidency. By December 2022, the bill will be processed through the JCPS cluster and Cabinet. Once Cabinet approval is obtained, the bill will be introduced to Parliament, and the parliamentary processes that follow will be supported by this party. Slide 6. Chair, the other bills that have already been dealt with and we are still in the process of dealing with is the Criminal Law Forensic Procedures Amendment Bill 2022. That is awaiting acceptance and signature of the President. So that bill has been already dealt with. Then the next one is the Protection of the Constitutional Democracy Against Terrorist and Related Activities Amendment Bill 2022, which is currently undergoing parliamentary processes. So the 19th of July 2022, the ACC reported the introduction of the bill in Parliament, and on the 31st of August 2022, the Department briefed the Portfolio Committee, and going forward, the parliamentary processes have kicked in, and the drafting team is in the process of supporting these processes which are currently underway. And in terms of the Private Security Industries Regulation Amendment Act 2014, the department has completed a comprehensive implementation plan for the act, and this has been submitted to CEDA for their consideration and their input and finalization. Slide 7, we move on to the ICID bill, Chair. The draft bill was finalized and approved by the Minister for further processing through the JCPS cluster. It was approved by the various platforms like the CEPCOM, the DGs, the Minister's cluster, Cabinet Committee as well, for the bill to proceed to Cabinet to be published for public comment in the Gazette. It served before the CAP Committee on the 13th of September, which was last week, and was approved to proceed to Cabinet. We are hoping that it will be approved by Cabinet in the foreseeable future. So all the formal requirements in terms of the drafting have been followed. The bill provides for comprehensive amendments to the IPED Act of 2011. It seeks to ensure that the IPED exercises its powers and performs its functions of office without fear, favor, or prejudice, in line with the decision of the Crown Court in the McBride versus Minister of Police and another. The bill also seeks to strengthen the institutional independence of IPED by, amongst other things, providing for a more transparent and open process for the appointment of the ED of IPED. Slide 9, please. The procedures for the parliamentary oversight for suspension, discipline, and removal of the ED of IPED in terms of the Constitutional Court judgment are set out in the amendment bill of 2019. So, Chair, there was no need for any further amendments in the relatively new Amendment Act. The bill seeks to strengthen the reporting requirements concerning the implementation of the disciplinary recommendations of IPED, and it is submitted that the amendments to the Act are necessary for strengthening certain provisions of the Act and for promoting professionalism and discipline within the police service. Chair, in terms of slide 10, in terms of the process going forward, the bill will serve before Cabinet at its next sitting. The department is in the process of procuring quotes from government. government policy work published for comment, and it will be published for a period of at least 4 weeks. All comments will be considered and, when necessary, incorporated into the bill for further consideration by the JCS cluster, with the goal of obtaining approval for introduction of the bill in Parliament. And this, Chair, can take place before the end of this year. We go on to slide 11, Chair. We now come to the Secondhand Goods Amendment Bill. Chair, during the implementation of this Act, the Secondhand Goods Act of 2009, there were certain shortcomings and lacunas that were identified. The proposals in the amendment seek to remedy these gaps. These mainly relate to definitions, record keeping, search and seizure warrants, as well as offences, and this is where amendments have been affected. The bill also seeks to strengthen the legislative framework for the regulation of business dealers in secondhand goods and pawn brokers in order to ensure that the dealers are regulated more efficiently and also to limit the market for stolen goods. It seeks also to introduce a system of admin fines, which will assist in the monitoring and combating of minor offences and also relieve the burden on the criminal justice system, especially in our courts. On slide 12, Chair, I deal with the process of going forward of the bill. So during the third quarter of 2022-2023, we will seek the Minister's approval to conduct stakeholder consultations on the draft bill and for submitting the draft bill to the various platforms within the JCCS cluster to seek approval from Cabinet to publish for comments. During the first quarter of 2023-2024, we will conduct consultations with the stakeholders on the draft bill and the revision thereof based on the outcomes of these consultations. So the bill will be revised during that period. The second quarter of 2023-2024, the revised draft bill will once again be processed through the JCCS cluster for approval. And during the third quarter of 2023-2024, the final draft bill will be submitted to Cabinet through the Minister for approval for its introduction to Parliament. When we move on to slide 13, Chair, here I will deal with the Stock Theft Amendment Bill. Chair, this bill seeks to repeal the Stock Theft Act of 1959. The amendment bill provides for the establishment of regulatory framework to regulate the possession of livestock, to control the theft thereof and its products within and through the borders of the Republic of South Africa, and to combat crimes related to the possession and the theft of animals and animal products. The effective system for the theft of animals requires strong legislation to regulate the chair, and the Department of Agriculture is currently developing a livestock identification and traceability system the department is, the drafting team is in consultation with the department and to ensure that there's synergy among these two pieces of legislation. So the process going forward here on slide 14 in terms of the Stock Theft Amendment Bill, the third and fourth quarters 2022-2023, that is still within the time period, the draft bill will be consulted through the JCCS cluster for support and Cabinet approval for publication in the Gazette for Public Comment. The first and second quarters of 2023-2024, the bill will be published in the Gazette. An analysis and consideration and incorporation of the comments received on the draft bill will be considered. And in the third and fourth quarters of 2023-2024, the final draft bill will be submitted to the Minister for approval to process through the JCCS cluster for Cabinet approval for introduction in Parliament. Then we come on to slide 15, where we deal with the Firearms Control Amendment Bill. The purpose for the amendment here is to strengthen the existing provisions of the current Act. Following the invitation for public comment, the bill was published in August 2021. There was a tremendous opposition to the bill in its totality. Then on the instruction of the chairperson of this committee and the Minister of Police, they were instructed to conduct a number of bilateral engagements with various stakeholders that this has been done. The final engagement was with MedLab, and that was towards the end of August 2022. So the drafting team is in the process of consolidating all the comments and refining this goal as a result of these engagements. A mandate will be sought from the minister on the proposals on the way forward. Slide 16 here takes us to the interim critical infrastructure protection regulations. So the development of these regulations has been split into two sets. The first set concerns the operations of the critical infrastructure council, and the other set concerns the numerous comprehensive issues that must be regulated upon as provided for in the Act of 2019. The first set of regulations that regulate that relate to the operations of the council, they are commonly termed the interim regulations. They've been published for comments, and the comments, those comments that will strengthen the regulations were incorporated into the version that was sent to Parliament for scrutiny. The interim regulations have been adopted by the portfolio committee, and they have been referred to the National Assembly, where they were adopted yesterday. And thereafter, they will go to the select committee on security for justice and for currency. Chair, this brings me to the conclusion of this presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. However, I'd like to say that this does not present a very good picture. The picture that I have is that the only piece of legislation that will still come to us is the IPA bill, and that is if we are lucky. The tax amendment bill, in my assessment, will not come to the committee to see. I don't want to give my own assessment. I'd like to listen to the members. My understanding is that if the tax bill is stable, it will collapse because it is a comprehensive bill and will have to go to all provinces for 5 years. I do not want to say I'm dismayed, but this is rather disappointing. I noted the hand of Honourable Whitfield.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just have one comment and then one question. The comment is that I think that it would just be more realistic, I suppose, as you've already indicated, to factor in other issues or elements in the timeline or process in this legislation, in particular the fact that we have a national election in 2024. And Parliament's program is likely to be disrupted by the run-up to that campaign. So we don't really have the next 2 years. We've probably got, accumulatively, probably got a year in which to finalise any legislation if we to avoid it lapsing in the sitting Parliament. The other question that I have, Chair, is I'm greatly appreciative of the fact that the IPED bill appears to be moving speedily and should be with the committee before the end of the year. As you know, I have drafted a private member's bill, and I didn't want to have to go that route. It would have been a duplication and waste of our time.
Honourable Whitfield, I missed you. You were breaking up, or I couldn't hear. Your last sentence, could you repeat?
My last comment was really about...
You're still breaking up.
Well, then I apologise, Chair. I'm not sure why. I've got strong signal. Can any other colleagues hear me?
Am I the only one?
I can hear you loud and clear. You might be able to get back to signal, Chair.
My apologies, it's been on my side. Honourable Woodfield, I'm sorry, could you just assist me with your last sentence?
Let me just say that I'm very excited about the IPED. question that I have for Advocate Bell is, I didn't see any reference in the notes on the IBIT bill referring to the inclusion of law enforcement, that law enforcement in municipalities would need to report or be held accountable to IBIT in the same manner as Metro Police and SAS. This is a point that the Minister of Police has repeatedly made, and one which we absolutely support, and so I find it strange that it's not there. But if it arrives without it, perhaps the committee would then have an opportunity to include it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Whitfield. I could hear you now, and I appreciate your comments. Honourable Wick, Honourable Fiyadi.
Thank you, Chair. And let me also welcome the presentation on the time frame. With the IP bill, I think one is a bit comfortable that it is moving. With the SAPS bill, like other honorables have said, one is more concerned. I just want to check whether when they say the challenge, is the bill only about amending the issue of CPFs, or are there other issues that we need to deal with, or the issue of CPFs the only stumbling block for the bill to move forward in terms of parliamentary processes? I didn't get that and there was somewhere where the bill is that if you go into the next cabinet sitting, is the next cabinet sitting referring to the sitting of today or another cabinet sitting? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Wolf. Honourable Wolf, my network is failing me. Could you just assist me? A civilian secretariat, you can respond. I'm trying to get a better network.
Advocate Bell will also come in terms of maybe the last question by one of the
Thank you, Chair. Yes, yes, we know that, Chair, and that's exactly what we will do. We just throw all our energies into that, all of us. Can I proceed to respond to Honourable Whitfield's question, Chair?
Yes, you may.
So the question was on the inclusion of the law enforcement into IPES. Yes, Chair, it has been considered. We also obtained a legal opinion from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. We were advised in that legal opinion that it would be unconstitutional to include all law enforcement into IPES for a number of reasons, the main ones being that it would, one, infringe the Constitution and the mandate of IPES, because IPES is mandated to have oversight over the staff and Metro Police. Then the other infringement would be on other legislation, like the municipal legislation and the local government and provincial legislation, because there is legislation that covers law enforcement in terms of local government and municipal and provincial legislation. So for that reason, we did not include law enforcement under the mandate of IPES. So that's where I will stop with that one. I think the Secretary has responded to the other issues with regards to the staff and the questions that were asked by the Chief. Thank you, Chief. I hope that answers the question.
Thank you, Advocate Dell. Mr. Amaru. Honourable members, do I have any further hands? Honourable Whitfield, your hand is up again. Sheikh Imam, your hand. I saw your hand, but it's not up. Honourable Whitfield.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I appreciate it. Apologies for coming in again at the tail end. Just in respect of the SAFT Amendment Bill and the intention to provide a stipend to CPS, as well as the fact that the CPS would move away from SAFT and towards the CSPS and the provinces, is the intention for the provinces then to carry the cost of remunerating these volunteers who sit on these police forums? Thank you.
Any further comments or questions? You may respond.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Currently, we are discussing with SAPS, as I've indicated, also with the departments, HODs of departments of provincial community safety, where we are looking at different modalities, finance modalities, for us to arrive at the best answer. So it is not possible for me now to give a direct answer on this question. So, but that's what we're working with departments of community safety and SAPS towards.
Thank you very much, Mr. Amaru. Honorable Shembeni.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Yeah, I know I might be late to ask this based on the issue of CPFs. There are the issue of the reserves. I don't think that it is included. We were not talking about that. I'm just raising it. But when we talk about remuneration of the CPFs, what about those reserves that are doing a dangerous work in the CPFs that are not remunerated? We've never spoken about them in that period. And then I'm just asking, can't we add something that speaks to the issue of the CPFs? Because now, as we speak, we are experiencing a problem that we're getting calls left and right about the FCS that wants to be incorporated to the CPFs, whereas that is not the law, that if you are a member of their service, you must be enlisted as a member of the CPS.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'm with General Kinnab, and through you, let me allow her to first respond, and then I'll then add after her response. General Kinnab, through you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
General Binar, can you respond?
There, General Binar. General McClara, I don't think we have General Binar. Could we have someone else to assist us? If you do have.
Maybe then I can help with the response. Currently, as it stands, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, there is an allocated budget for the remuneration of reservists when they are called out for special events. For example, one of the examples is during when we have the local government elections or national and provincial elections, or for any other special event that might be declared as a special event by the national commissioner. That's currently as it stands according to our directives, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members.
Honorable Members, I think this is a matter that has to be dealt with more sensitively. It is a concern. It has been raised with all the members, and certainly the members have raised it with me. Could we please request perhaps that the civilian secretary to look at this more extensively? Jim, could you facilitate this, please, on the board?
Yes, no, we take note, Chair, of your comments. We will do that.
Thank you, Honorable Dave. Honorable Members, do you have any further comments or questions? Honorable Shimbeni, is this a historical end or a new end?
It's a historical chair, but it will have got a lot of questions. Unfortunately, the SOP has been expected all of them, because there are a lot of issues, I say, that we can care about leaving them unattended. It's damaging the image of the organization. There are a lot of questions that have been not answered. At the present moment, we've got a question whereby I would like to have the provincial commissioners around so that I can ask this question. And remember, Chair, I said in the last meeting that I don't want to be part of the committee that will be rendered useless, that we did not do our job, we did not hold the executive accountable during our campaign. Something must be done. We are not just voting cows here. We are here to work, and people must do their part. And yeah, that's my comment. I would need that we get to the bottom of these things, that there is corruption in the phone book. Investigation has been done. A report was sent to the national. Somebody sitting on top of the report, because now this includes friendships, and that the one that is supposed to be dealt with might be known something against the one who must deal with. So this is a lot of stories. We must have the commissioner here, have the provincial commissioners and the senior minister. I want answers. I want answers right here. And the protection disclosure of the suspended deputy national commissioner. We did not get any responses, and the time is not, it's totally picked up from the minister. He said he was responding in writing. And remember, we said we wanted to ask questions here in the portfolio meeting. And I will be happy as an officer, I don't remember whether it's the week, Honorable Siami that spoke about physical meetings. I'm supporting those physical meetings 200%. So that we speak to these people right in front of us and ask questions so that they can give us answers, because this visual meeting, we don't even know whether that person is there listening to you or what. So, yeah, I think we need to do something. Action must be taken as soon as possible. And remember also, Chairperson, the request, not the request, the instruction that was given by the fired or the expelled whatever a commissioner's story of the applications by the senior ministers to their post. Nothing has been done with that. Nothing. We kept quiet, and people are occupying posts there without qualifications. It can't be correct. It can't be correct. So that's my submission, Chair, for the leaky moment that I got. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Shimini. We have noted your concerns. Today we will be dealing with the legislation, and you have our full support. We are revising the program to address the concerns which you have raised once more in the committee. Honorable Majozi.
Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, okay. I thought I lost connection again. No, are you giving me an opportunity?
Yes, Honorable Majozi.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Chairperson. Let me greet honorable members and subs department, and maybe to echo members who have spoken before that there are many issues that we need to deal with. I went for an in-house meeting after this, but I see now that we have discussed some of these things in this platform. No longer, now they are public knowledge. So I think we seriously need to meet and to have provincial commissioners as well as all of us in the NSF, because we don't know what SAPs do in these different districts. You go to Johannesburg, they treat you differently from Ekurhuleni. You go to another district with the same case, you are treated differently in all schools. So I think those are the issues that we need to deal with, Chairperson. And also, yes, as well as we've started before, the news is saying that the high profile general, we are interested in taking people the port and whatever. Fine, we'll get there. But also, we are receiving emails and WhatsApp chats informing us about certain information that we will not talk about in this platform. That is why maybe we should have a physical attendance so that we are able to address all those issues. And our contracts are public, so we are contacted easily, and yes, we should, because of we should hold people accountable for whatever information that comes and get clarity, and also seek more information from them. So I do concur with the fact that we should have a physical meeting when we come back for the last term. And also we need a general, because we've got certain questions for certain provinces, especially me. I have a lot of questions for Gauteng that I need to the commissioner to speak to, and also the Department of what is this? Okay, yeah, I'll remember it. Fine. If I do remember it, I'll write on the checkbox. There are cops of people who are still in mortuary for more than 2-3 years. Because they cannot be identified, and some have identified, some families have identified people, but now they cannot be released because there's a backlog. So, yeah, we need to talk about that, Chairperson, and then we need to give them the places and everywhere, whatever it is that is happening, so that these processes must be done. So we get these messages all the time. As a contact, we must arrange this issue, and also we seek that meeting, that physical search.
Thank you, Honorable Major. Mr. Blanche?
Chairperson, thank you. Apparently we are a bit off the agenda now, but you know, since we are raising issues, outstanding issues, I just want to also say again that I've also forwarded quite a few things, and if you are going to apply your mind about this outstanding issues, Chairperson, I would also request that those are also considered, and then we can decide at a later stage how and when are we going to deal with that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Members. You certainly are stretching me a bit today, but I'm being very lenient. I told you we are discussing the legislation, but I'm allowing you an opportunity to give your input. Honourable Whitfield.
Thank you, Chair. Just a very brief point for me. A significant development in our policing environment this week, which I just wanted to ascertain whether you, on behalf of the committee, will be making a statement, and whether the committee will be receiving a presentation or some feedback on the arrest of former National Police Commissioner General Khomotso Phahlane and other senior crime intelligence officials. I think it is absolutely necessary for the committee to receive insight and feedback to whatever extent is possible, so that we can, as much as we are determined to hold SAPS accountable, that we can also commend them when good work is done. But this is a significant development, Chair, and I would be surprised if the committee does not pay careful attention to it and perhaps receive a briefing from the Minister. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Deputy Minister. I hope that you have noted this and that it is brought to the attention of the Minister and the Deputy Minister. Honourable Wook and Honourable Deputy Minister, the members of the committee are consistently raising pertinent issues, and we would like to have an opportunity to communicate and change the members, I'm now to move on to, and that is the amendment to the ACP, Honourable Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chair. I'll once more ask that we allow General Mutala and the team, I think there's General Rabi, but General Mutala will indicate through you, Chair. Over to you, General Mutala, through your chairperson.
You may continue.
Thank you, Honourable TM and Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. We'll be presenting, and the presentation will be conducted by Major General Rabi, our National Head of Strategic Management. General Rabi, you may proceed through your chairperson.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members of the honourable members of the committee, our honourable Deputy Minister and Senior Management of SAP, and other state entities represented in the meeting. Honourable Chair, I was advised that we don't redo the presentation, but just recap on what we have presented at the previous opportunity. And I think it's also then appropriate to appreciate the fact, Honourable Chair, that we can represent this, and for the purpose of the committee considering the amendments that the department wants to do to the performance indicators. I just want to confirm, Chair, that in terms of what we previously presented, there are only 5 performance indicators where we want to amend the targets associated with those indicators. So the content of the indicators and the objectives associated with those indicators remain the same. 4 of the indicators that we represented, Honourable Chair, remain or is directly related to contact crime. That includes your contact crime as an overall category, and then under that there are 3 subcategories that talks to your 3 high contact crime weight stations, the reported crimes against women, that is also contact crime, and then reported contact crimes against children below 18 years. Just to recap the reason why we made amendments to these 4 indicators that I've just presented. When the initial ACP was submitted, we take into consideration preliminary results after a 9-month period to determine the targets associated with these indicators. Now, following the completion of the financial year and the annual report that we are currently finalizing, we noticed that there's a difference between, or there's a significant difference between the year-end results and what we considered during the 9-month period to compile the initial ACP indicators or the targets associated with these indicators. Now, the reason why we consider this as important is because the President indicated in the 2019-20 SONAR that there must be a 50% reduction in contact crime or serious violent crime over the next decade. So as a result of that, we consider contact crime or serious violent crime as one of the apex indicators in the APP, and we thought it necessary to make sure that we adjust those targets, you know, according to the actual result that was then reported at the end of the financial year. If I might use an example, Chair, of contact crime in total, now we initially published the AR of the APP, we anticipated a result. If you look at the contact crime as a total, we anticipated an increase of 11.8% in total. But when we got to the end of the financial year, that actually increased to 13%. I want to get to the right page. That increased to 13.5%. So what we have done is we have adjusted our targets upwards to take into consideration these increases and actual results that were actually higher than what we initially anticipated, to ensure that we as a department are fully aware of the expected outcomes, because the methodology that we apply with this specific indicator and all 3 the categories that I referred to is the
the anticipated outcome that was presented, that was committed to by the president, we have to calculate that over a 10-year period. Now, the net result of that is if we don't achieve targets in the years, in the early years of the decade that the president referred to, it puts more pressure on the remaining years. So, as a result of that, they adjusted the targets upwards. And so, for instance, your contact crime, we initially planned for an 8.75% reduction in the current financial year. That has now gone up to a 9.21% reduction given the results that has been achieved. If I can use the example of crimes against violence against women, in the initial APP that we presented, we indicated an increase, we anticipated or planned increase of 7.2%. That has now been increased to 9.17%. So we would just want to give the committee the assurance that the purpose of adjusting the targets as far as the contact crime is concerned was to make sure that the targets that we include in the APP is reliable and that it's an actual, that it's a more accurate representation of the actual situation. What bothered us a little bit was taking into account that we had COVID-19 in the previous years. Now that impacted on crime figures, and as a result of that, the model that we normally apply was also affected. So that is the purpose that we made the adjustment to those four indicators on the chair. And I just want to confirm again that the adjustment that I'm referring to is just in terms of the actual targets. Then the last indicator that stands on its own, on which I will ask General Motala and the team to respond to that, but maybe just to give some introduction. As I trust that the committee will recall that our previous National Commissioner introduced the Safer City Initiative 3 years ago, if I'm correct, and we've been focusing as a department on that. But as a result of the economic situation and high dependencies in terms of the Safer City project on external role players, we were advised by the minister in the beginning of the financial year that we must make 100% sure that those cities that we are targeting, that the project is optimally implemented and that we reach the desired result. So as a result of that, the department chair then took a decision to adjust the target to confirming and making 100% sure and give the assurance as a department that indeed the cities that we have prioritized, that the project itself on Safer City Initiative is fully implemented. Honourable Chair, I'm going to stop there. I trust I've given sufficient information. With your permission, ma'am, I would then ask General Motlala and the city if they want to add more information to the city, the Safer City framework. Thank you for the opportunity, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much. You may continue.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Just to add to what the General Rabi indicated in the Safer City, I'm with Mayor General Matonzi, the Corporate Head for Social Crime Prevention, responsible for this performance indicator. General Matonzi, can you then add to what General Rabi has actually already indicated through you, Chairperson?
Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members of the EM, and all protocol observed. I think General Rabi has covered everything that's related to this particular area. I think I'm covered for now, but we'll take questions if that is. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Members. What we've done now is actually correct. We have separated the National Policing Strategy from the amendment to the APP. The last time they did the presentation, they had a combination of the National Policing Strategy, which was presented by our new National Commissioner, with the amendments to the SEC. We agreed that we will have the that we will have the National Commission and now presenting the National Policing Strategy at a separate meeting, and that during that meeting we do focus in particular with the National Policing Strategy, to focus on that. We will adopt the report on the addendum next week. So the report is presented to us. I think the addendum to the ACP, we dealt with it before. As they have the correct version now, I'll have the members comment. You may raise your hand. Honorable
Tablash
and then Honorable
Grunewald. Chairperson, thank you. I think we have more clarity now. I just want to confirm, during the previous presentation, you know, I'm referring to the Safer City program now. We were told, you know, that, you know, the aim was to roll this process out to 10 cities, and then, you know, a decision was taken only to focus on three. And you know, when we ask further questions, it appears that the three cities will not even be also finalized. And I just want to get confirmation on that. Chairperson, then the last thing, the report that you're referring to, my memory doesn't serve me well at the moment. I don't know, when was that ACT for me? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Morning, Honourable Members and everyone. I came to just take my video out. Chairperson, firstly I want to say that if I look at the revised target, I have a question in this sense. It's fine. We must increase our targets. But a general question that arises, Honourable Chair, is I am worried that police stations, if they get these targets, then they don't report the cases. I receive too many, people contacting me and saying that, well, I went to the police station, but I don't even want to take my case. And the moment we increase our targets, to say that we want to reduce, for instance, if you look at contact crimes with 9.21%, I want to know what steps are taken to ensure that police stations don't actually process the charges laid at police stations. It's the same with, if I can go to the crime of contact crimes against women. Chairperson, in a certain sense, the more cases that are reported is actually an indication that there's progress in the fighting of the crime against women. Because if you want to reduce it, you're going to encourage police stations to not report it on the system in the first place, but specifically when it comes to contact crime. I have numerous queries from people that really, and I repeat myself now, saying that they don't even want to take my case. Or if I phone them, then they tell me that I must come in and come and lay a charge. They don't want to go out to crime scene or anything like that. So taken to ensure that we get a correct reflection of these targets. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Honourable, Honourable Shembeni. Before Honourable Shembeni, please, we must report back to the National Assembly on the addendum. And the addendum was referred to the committee through the ATC. So on the 19th of July this year, the minister tabled the addendum to the annual performance plan of SAC 2022-2023, which was referred then to the portfolio committee of police for consideration. The committee must, after consideration of the amended performance targets, we must first adopt a report, and then the report must be tabled in the National Assembly for adoption. Do we have clarity on that now? Honourable Sir Blanche?
Thanks, Chairperson. You explained it very well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Shembeni?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to talk to the focus on the issue of the safer cities, that we must not lose focus from attending the so-called rural areas, because I have noticed that a lot of crime over a lot of firearms are coming from rural areas, because police in those areas are not visible, and they are taking things for granted as if nothing is happening there, whereas that's where the danger is. So I'm just warning the SAPS not to lose focus on rural areas. And there are important issues that now we must take into consideration, like when we talk about the intelligence of the SAPS, it's so-called CIs, I don't know what are they doing, because you can't have a place where every funeral there are firearms that are being discharged, daylight, and nothing's happening. In taverns, there are taverns that firearms are being discharged every weekend or every day, and we've got police officers drinking there. We've got this intelligence walking around or driving around, and one man in a car, a very big car, I don't care, one man. And in the police station, there is nothing, there are no vehicles. But these ones are driving around, coming with nothing. So that's why I'm saying the focus must not be lost by the SAPS on rural areas. There is a lot that is happening there. And even if those people that are committing crime in cities, when they run away for hiding, they go to rural areas. So that's my submission, Chairperson, that we must strictly work on rural areas. We must not just neglect them. Crime is very high there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Shembeni. Honourable Deputy Minister, would you have to respond? And then we'll have the SAC responding.
Sorry, Chair. I am not necessarily 100% okay. I will ask that we allow General Mshala and the team to respond, Chair. Thank you.
Apologies for that, DM. I hope you feel better soon. General Mshala and the team.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, and wishing our Honorable
and speedy recovery. Honorable Chairperson, on the question that was raised by Honorable Carol Blanche on the number of facilities that previously it was 10 and then now it's 3. I will allow General Matonski just to clarify that one, to say currently at its 10, how many safer cities have been actually identified for implementation, so that we for this financial year. And then the next question on the issue of revised target, what steps are being taken to present to ensure that the present process of targets doesn't lead to the late reporting. Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, one of the steps that we are actually implementing in the Rafia Police Service is that through our combined assurance, we ensure that the stations are visited by announced visit or unannounced visit by some of our combined assurance partners, such as a division inspectorate, which is also having a footprint in the provinces. But also we also have duty officers who are also on duty 24/7. At both at station, district, and provincial levels, but we also, honorable chairperson, to prevent that there is no issues of late reporting, we also have our colleagues from crime registrar also doing some of the inspections. To ensure that in terms of the necessary instructions that have been issued for the registration of crime, that the stations are actually in compliance. And I must also indicate, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, that if it is found that any police station management or members are actually not ensuring this reporting of this of any crime, that the Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, serious disciplinary steps are taken, which might also lead to even the opening of criminal cases against such individuals. Then, Honorable Chairperson, the issue of the question that was asked by Honorable Shebeni that the focus, as much as we focus on the urban areas, that the old focus must also be on the rural areas. We take note of that. Hence, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, earlier this year, the Minister actually convened the Rural Safety Summit that was held in the Barrage State, where we actually had to really invite all the relevant stakeholders that are actually relevant in that space. And there was also an integrated committee that was established with a clear mandate to ensure that we make sure that the rural safety strategy is actually ensuring that it yields the necessary results. And we also ensure, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, that our resources, as we allocate our resources, that the rural areas are not also neglected through our integrated resource management strategy. I will then request Honorable Chairperson that General Matonzi and General Bina maybe just to add the answers that I've given through you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much. You may continue.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, again, and here. On the first question, Honorable Chair, from Honorable Kelblanche, yes, it is correct that previously it was 10
General Pinnock, you may respond.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, and my apologies for losing the connection earlier. General McCullough has already, I think, answered most of the question in terms of rural safety. What I just want to add in terms of the registration of crime and ensuring that our members correctly register all the crimes that are reported to them. This is also about, specifically in terms of contact crime and contact crimes against women and children, who are active indicators. These are also our indicators that are subject to the audit of performance information. So a specific initiative that we've put in place that is related to the auditing of performance information is measures to ensure that we correctly register crime to specifically prevent repeat audit findings in this regard, because we've had audit findings in this regard, and then as well as the post-audit action plan where we identify specific shortcomings based on the audit and then work to correct that. So we have identified very specific measures that require from station level, from district level, from provincial and from national level that we draw samples of the cases registered and check that they are correctly registered. At the end of every quarter, we do a selection of checking on cases registered to ensure that those cases were correctly registered, and we are required to do that at national level, at provincial level, at district level, and then at station level there is the specific checklist in place that is intended to ensure that the case is correctly identified, correctly registered, and that there's quality assurance even at station level to ensure that cases are not either incorrectly registered or crime information is not manipulated. And that is why we take this so seriously, that when we do find audit findings in this regard, we basically demand that there must be an investigation to determine where the responsibility lies, and that disciplinary or consequence management is put in place. Because if the procedures that are in place are correctly followed, it is extremely unlikely that the cases will be incorrectly registered. So it means someone either neglected to do what they were supposed to do or deliberately didn't do what they were supposed to do. I mean, also we've invested with HRD in ongoing training in terms of the specific role players in the CSC that registers cases, for instance, your relief and your CSC commanders, as well as your data capturers. But then in addition to that, we are working with our TMS division on the ongoing enhancement of the system, so that we can use the system also to provide some checks and balances, for instance, on the using the date of birth or the ID number to correctly identify the sex of the victim, or to correctly identify the age of the person, so that we don't have incorrect information entered in terms of whether the victim is an adult or a child, and also linking specific charges to specific victims. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I will also, through you, Honourable Chairperson, request that General Rabi also just to add.
You may.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I just want to make a comment from a strategic perspective, and not necessarily from the operational perspective that my colleagues have already explained. The reported crime or the crime figures have been used as an indicator of police success for a number of years, and there has been several debates whether it should be used as an indicator of police success because of the unintended consequences that Honorable Groenewald referred to, where you set targets to reduce crime, and the intention of setting such targets is the intention is to reduce levels of crime through effective policing, and not through the manipulation of crime statistics, which unfortunately do happen from time to time. Hence, we have implemented the measures that General Pinar referred to. And we've received recommendations from other entities, such as the Institute for Security Studies, that why don't we as a department not rather focus on the effective resolving of crime that has been reported, and use that as an indicator of the police success in terms of, you know, actually responding to crime. So it is correct, as Honourable Groenewald said, Chair, that we do identify instances where that happens, but we do also have other mechanisms in place where people can report when such complaints are not being attended to, like the crime. unstop line and various other mechanisms that we have. But on that note, Chair, I want to say that as the head of strategic management, data integrity and the integrity of policing is very important for my office. So I would open my office for that as well and say if there are such incidents reported, that it also use our channel and it can also then be reported to us so that we make sure that it's properly being attended to. And Chair, then the last issue about the Honourable Shembeni's comment about making sure that we don't neglect the rest of the organisation, in addition to the information that has already been provided by Lieutenant General Motlala, there are various initiatives that focus on other types of stations. We have the top 30 GBV stations, we have the top 30 high contact crime stations. In addition to that, we have the top 20 in each one of the provinces where we focus on, you know, specific provinces with high incidence of crime. And then, for instance, we also have an initiative by the minister during the MINMEC where we visit rural stations during the MINMEC to identify challenges and policing challenges. And then and we visit approximately 9-10 stations per MINMEC in each one of the provinces. We have concluded we've done KZN, we've done the Eastern Cape, and we've recently done Mpumalanga. And the intention of that is then to also identify other stations which are problematic. And as I indicated, the majority of these are actually those rural stations. And then we also then implement interventions to ensure that those stations are properly capacitated. Thank you for the opportunity, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much. Do we have any further responses?
That will be all from our side, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, General Motlala and your team. Thank you very much for those responses. We appreciate it. Honourable Members, as you know, we do not approve the ACP. It's approved by the Minister. We must just consider the amended targets and report to the National Assembly. What we're doing with the addendum is not the same as the normal process as the APP together with the budget. So Parliament approves the budget, but it does not approve the APP. There's no approval sought, but we must adopt the report next week. So Honourable Members, for next week, we will adopt the committee's report on the addendum. Secondly, we will workshop the bill in more detail. We will receive the written responses before the meeting next week, and the written responses should include all responses to questions which were asked. I've been also requested that an urgent report be prepared on all the outstanding matters. We will prioritize this report as we prepare for the strat plan. We should get a list of all the outstanding matters so that members do not repeat the same questions and we don't share our frustrations whenever we meet. And those frustrations are being repeated, and we don't need to get any responses when we raise those questions that we have. Honourable Members, we noted the apology of Dr. Groenewald. So that was noted. Dr. Groenewald, thank you for joining us. Honourable Members, the meeting is now. Thank you very much for attending. Thank you very much for the presentations and the responses. Thank you very much to the Deputy Minister. We wish you a speedy recovery, Deputy Minister. Honourable Whip, Honourable Members, thank you very much for your input. They are much appreciated, and they will certainly